It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations.
I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Men will still say, this was our finest hour.
Hello, this is Speaking of History, and this is podcast number 27. Today's date is June 11th, 2006, and tonight we are broadcasting a special podcast. This is the first in a series we'll have this summer called History Hits the Road, and we're currently podcasting from about two blocks away from the United States Capitol in Washington, D.C. And tonight's also a special podcast because I have a special guest.
I'm Jamie Lankhorst. I am Eric's wife, and we are on vacation in Washington, D.C.
And that leads us to our topic for tonight. Our topic for tonight is the top 10 tips for planning a vacation in Washington, D.C. Now, Jamie and I are both history teachers and have a background in history and political science. So when we found out that we were going to be coming to Washington and had a couple extra days, we were very excited. And then we started to plan our trip. And as you can imagine, there is so much to do in Washington that we really had to sit down and kind of come up with a plan. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about what we did to prepare. And we've been here for a couple of days, so we're going to share with you a couple tips if you're planning to come to Washington. Since this is heard by a lot of history teachers, you may be planning a trip to Washington, D.C. this fall for the National Council of Social Studies Conference that will be happening in Washington, D.C. So if you are planning a trip here, here's a couple things that you might want to take into consideration. All right, our first one, and this was a big one, don't try to do everything. Jimmy, you want to talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah, we tried to cram a whole bunch of stuff into one day, and it just didn't work. We ended up spending more time in one place and then ran out of time to go to other places. So I would suggest just putting a couple things down on your itinerary if you're really anal like we are and make itineraries so that you have extra time to do some extra things.
Yeah, we tried to really plan a lot into one day, and you know, you get to the point where you're trying to basically check things off a list, and you can't really enjoy all of the things that you really want to get done. So we kind of set up a list of priorities, what we really wanted to see. If you've been to Washington, D.C. before, maybe things that you haven't seen on previous trips. So really, I guess, try and plan for less. You can always add more later, but really kind of enjoy the things you want to and try not to do too much in exactly one day. And that's really easy to do in Washington because there's potentially so much to do.
Right, and sometimes opportunities pop up later, like we were at the National Archives and then got to talking to the interpreter, and he actually took us to his new education center, and we ended up spending like an hour and a half extra at the National Archives, and that was a really good opportunity, but then we weren't able to do some of the things that we had planned that day. So
less is more, I guess. Number two, if you're looking at places to stay for your trip to Washington, consider some places outside of the actual city of Washington, D.C. We actually stayed out in Crystal City on the Virginia side out by Arlington, and had some really nice hotels. It was a great bargain as far as price compared to some of the hotels inside D.C. And we were close to the metro stop, so we could walk a couple blocks and get on the metro and could basically get anywhere in Washington, D.C. So maybe consider that. I know that's one suburb. But right now we're actually just a couple blocks from the Capitol, and it's been really nice, you know, being able to walk two blocks and to see the Capitol also. So kind of just depends on what you're here for, what you want to specifically do. But I'd say particularly if you have a family, you know, you could stay outside of Washington, walk a couple blocks, and easily be in the city in just a couple minutes on the metro.
Right, and like we stayed in Crystal City, and even though our hotel wasn't super close to the metro, it was more than a couple blocks. Eric said it was a couple blocks. It was more like 10.
6 blocks, probably.
But anyway, the hotel has a shuttle to the metro stop, and then I think you can also call the shuttle at your hotel, and they'll come pick you up also, so you don't, you know, have to worry about getting lost back to the hotel or whatever. So.
And it was safe, too. I mean, we felt
safe. Yeah, I felt safe traveling in Crystal Cities. Yeah.
All right, tip number 3. If you know you're coming in advance a little bit, go to your local bookstore and buy some of the guidebooks that really have a lot of information about restaurants and lodging and maps and, you know, dates that things are open and times and things. It'll really help you plan a lot. We might have overdone it a little bit. We got 3 different guidebooks, and I guess a lot of the information was the same. But we were really able to sit down and kind of read about some of the attractions that we weren't familiar with and plan a little bit according to times. And it made it very easy to be able to contact these people also because their phone number was right there. And we didn't carry all 3 of them with us around the city, but we picked one that we liked and put that in our book bag. And then we have something to look at if we want to call somebody during the day and check on a time or if something's available. So definitely get a guidebook. And a lot of them have maps also inside that you can just tear out and take with you while you're out and about the city. All right, number 4, try and plan your day with geography in mind a little bit. It is very easy to get around Washington with the metro and public transportation, but it does take a little bit of time to get from one end of the city to the other or even like one end of the mall to the other. So try and plan your day a little bit with geography in mind, particularly maybe where you want to eat. Take into consideration how long you might stay at one particular place. So if you kind of plan it as kind of a flowing day, it'll help you so you're not running back and forth for different things that you may have plans on doing during the day. Mm-hmm. All right, number 5. Definitely, as soon as you know you're coming to Washington, call your state senator. Let them know that you're coming. There are a lot of advantages to doing this. They can help you get tickets to some events that basically are exclusive to Senate offices. They can also tell you a little bit about some things that might be going on that you're not familiar with in Washington for that particular week. So definitely call your senator and let them know that you're coming.
You can also schedule Capitol tours, which are much more extensive and inclusive than trying to just explore the Capitol on your own. You can go more places with someone from the senator's office. It will probably be an intern, but, I mean, our experience at the Capitol building was excellent. He definitely knew what he was talking about, and he was, you know, I mean, we both have history backgrounds, so he was definitely open to learning some new things that maybe he didn't know. So our tour was excellent, so I'd definitely go that route for the Capitol.
And if you want to be in the gallery for either the House or the Senate, that's how you get your tickets to be able to go to the gallery. So definitely let them know, and they'll set up a time usually through email and let you know when the tour is happening on which, you know, which particular day. And they're very accommodating. On our tour, we maybe had 15 people, and it was very nice having the individual attention and not just being let loose with a map in hand.
Right. The museums and the Smithsonian museums in Washington are all free, but it's still helpful to get tickets. So, I mean, the word tickets often incurs a price, but it's not really a price. It's just free, but you need to get it in order to be able to not stand in line for 3 hours trying to get into a museum. So.
All right, number 6, double check, triple check on times for particular days. Even though it says that something might be open from 8 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night, there's a lot of special activities happening in Washington, D.C., and various things do close or schedules are changed. One thing in particular, if you're going to the Smithsonian's, Smithsonian Natural History Museum, for example, has summer hours up until 7:30 in the evening. But yet, if they have a special event during the day, they close down at 5. And it's not really posted in a lot of places. And so, for example, we were down on the mall Monday night. I think it was Monday night. And suddenly at 5 o'clock, the museum closed, and a lot of people had no idea that the museum was closing 2.5 hours early. So call the place that you're planning on visiting. Sometimes there may be construction. They may be changing an exhibit. So if you really want to see something, I would definitely call ahead, you know, maybe even a couple weeks in advance. Double check on what's available or what's happening on that day, And then I would call again in the morning just to double check and make sure that things haven't changed, because everything isn't necessarily set in stone as far as special events. All right, number 7, bring some snacks. And we kind of did this and kind of didn't do this, but if you can pack some granola bars, cereal bars, a couple bottles of water maybe in your backpack.
Stuff you're going to eat.
During
Don't
the day.
Pack stuff you're not going to want to eat. So
It'll make it a lot easier, because then you have food accessible to you. And even though there's a lot of street vendors, the first night when we were walking around the mall, we got kind of hungry and didn't really know if we wanted to go to supper yet. And so we ended up buying a hot dog, a pretzel, and a pop, and it ran about $11 or so.
It was more like $15.
About $15. So, I mean, if you have cereal bars or whatever, that'd be a great thing to bring along, and you'll save a lot of time, and it'll be a lot more convenient for you as well. Number 8, keep in mind if you have children, what they might be able to do during the course of a day. You as an adult are going to be able to tolerate, you know, a 4-hour museum tour, probably a lot better than a 2-year-old will. And we saw a lot of unhappy parents this week having their children go through museums. And I'm sure the parents really wanted to stop and read all the exhibit information, but the children didn't. So kind of plan ahead with your children in mind.
Yeah, I would even get a guidebook for kids, because there's a ton of things that, you know, even a 2-year-old would be able to tolerate. Like at the National Archives, Addison, our 2-year-old, would have thought seeing the Constitution was really cool, because she talks about the Constitution all the time. She has a book. But she could not have sat through the, you know, 2-hour tour of the National Archives. So, I mean, definitely keep your kids in mind. And most of the museums have, like, a Discovery Center for kids that seems to be really cool. And Mount Vernon is awesome. It's very kid-friendly. Kids can, like, run all over the place. They can pet animals. So just, you know, gear things towards your kids. If you want to do more of the history-type things, then go alone.
And there were, actually, when we got our guidebooks, there were a couple of books that were specifically Washington, D.C. for kids, and talked about where it was easy to get a kid's meal and what were hands-on displays in the museums and things like that. So we're definitely not saying Washington is not kid-friendly, but just keep in mind that you're going to be able to stand in line a lot longer than your 2-year-old will and things like that.
Right.
All right, number 9, don't forget about the places that are very accessible around Washington, D.C., but are not necessarily inside the city. We talked about staying outside of Washington, D.C., but also some of the locations of amazing things that are just maybe 10, 15 miles away or even closer to D.C., things like Mount Vernon. My wife and I neither had been to Mount Vernon in previous visits to Washington, so we went down to Mount Vernon, and it was probably one of the highlights of our trip so far. We took public transportation. We took the metro as far south as we could go, and then went the last 10 miles in a public bus, and it cost about 35 cents to go the last 10 miles. Kind of double check on the bus schedule a little bit. We got on the bus schedule by the advice of the person at the metro station, employee, to take a certain number of bus, and we ended up on the actual bus route. It took about 55 minutes to go, about 10 miles. But they do have some express routes that go directly from the metro station down to Mount Vernon. And then also Alexandria. We had been in Alexandria a little bit on previous trips to Washington. But we spent some time down there last night and had a great time. Went on a ghost tour of the city of Alexandria, which we highly recommend, and had a great time eating down in Alexandria and just kind of walking up and down King Street. So don't forget about places surrounding Washington when you take your trip here to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, don't be afraid of taking the bus. It's not like a scary experience or anything. Just know that it takes a lot of time, and you will probably meet some interesting people on the bus. But, I mean, it wasn't a bad experience at all. It was just, it's very time-consuming.
And check the schedule, and you'll know a little bit in advance, you know, when to get there, and so you're not waiting a half an hour, 45 minutes for a bus that might only come once every hour or so. And our last tip, definitely check local events calendars. Besides the stuff in the guidebook and what everybody knows about Washington, D.C., there are a lot of things that happen on a daily basis in Washington. Different exhibits, there's different types of musical festivals. I know we were walking around on the mall a couple nights ago, and there was a free jazz concert just outside one of the Smithsonian's. Coming up on the mall, there's a Folklife Festival that the Smithsonian holds every year in June and July.
At the end of June.
At the end of June through the first week of July. So check local events calendars. One really good place to check is the people at the front desk of your hotel. A lot of hotels actually have a printed out sheet of some of the things that are happening that day, along with the times and phone numbers to call. And a lot of them are free. It's just a matter of knowing where they're at and what time they take place. So definitely check out the things that are happening day to day, as well as the long-term planning type stuff. So those are our top 10 list of things that you should consider if you're coming to Washington, D.C. A lot of you may know all these already. This was kind of a list of things to look for. We'll be talking a little bit in the next couple podcasts about things that we specifically did on our trip to Washington, D.C. And until then, good night, and thanks for listening.
Thanks.
The Speaking of History podcast is produced by Eric Langhorst in Liberty, Missouri, under a Creative Commons license. Visit the website for show notes and links to material in the podcast at www.speakingofhistory.blogspot.com. The podcast is also available on iTunes. Please email all comments and questions to speakingofhistory@gmail.com. Background music for the intro is Z from James Underberg from PodSafe Audio. Thanks for listening.